Happy 2015 to you. It's time for the first On Your Money of this new year, and we will spend it answering your questions to help you reach your financial goals. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is good to be back from my holiday break with Kevin, who is back from his holiday break, spending this hour with you, brushing up on our personal finance skills and getting 2015 started with good advice on money management. What are your financial goals for the year? What personal finance question would you like to get cleared up today? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC, joining us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
And we are kicking off this new year with a special thank you from us to listeners. What are we thankful for, Kevin?
Well, we are thankful for many things. First of all, for listening to the show, but since it is on three times a week on Wisconsin Public Radio and also available online at WPR.org, you really can't not listen to it. It's hard to get away from it. But we're also thankful for all the pledging and financial support you gave to Wisconsin Public Radio via this show. Again, last year, On Your Money listeners pledged over $100,000 to Wisconsin Public Radio during the show. So as a very small token of our appreciation for your listening and your financial support, we will spend this entire hour answering your questions. You can call in at 800-642-1234 or send an email at onyourmoney@wpr.org. If we don't get to your emailed question in this hour, we may address it in a future show as well.
And we already have very busy phone lines, but before we get to those calls and emails, let's talk a little bit about some common ground between common New Year's resolutions and getting those resolutions achieved. Where do we begin?
Well, according to a poll from the University of Scranton, yes, there is one, about half of us make resolutions during the year. And according to that survey, we all want to get richer and thinner.
Yep.
And we want to either lose weight, get a better handle on our finances, get in better shape. And it's not necessarily due to vanity, I think. It's usually about being more healthy and making smarter financial decisions. It's very tough, which is evident on how often these goals appear at the top of New Year's resolution lists, but they do have a similar path to success, and it's even possible to achieve both goals at the same time.
So, yeah, how do we do that? What are the shared methods we can use to, get ourselves and our finances in shape?
It's the simple but not easy On Your Money process. Knowing, changing, and maintaining. First of all, figure out where you are. Get on that scale and check yourself. Might be especially painful after the holidays to see that number. The scale's not broken. You just had a few too many krum kaka or something. And weigh yourself. And also, write down your spending for the next 30 days and track your net worth, add up your assets, subtract your liabilities, and generally that's your net worth. And then decide where you want to go from where you are and by when. Give yourself a deadline. That might be lose a certain amount of pounds by a certain date, or maybe get yourself ready to complete a 5K race by Memorial Day. And make sure if you do pick a date this year, make sure you put the year in too, because I've done this before and I've said, well, I never said a year, so I'll just say Memorial Day for next year. And in terms of your finances, try to reduce your spending by a certain dollar amount. See if you can survive by spending, say, 10% less, and maybe increase your net worth and do it, you know, organically by your own means rather than trying to hope that you win the lottery. Finally, it's about changing your behavior. And during that time period where you're trying to reduce your spending or reduce your eating or exercise more, make sure you're on a path to complete those activities and give yourself time, and then track that activity so you can congratulate yourself every day you go by and say, hey, I didn't have an extra donut at breakfast, or I went outside for a walk, or I had a chance to spend some money and I decided not to.
So can you give us an example of how we can achieve, you know, better financial shape and better fitness at the same time?
Sure. The Principal Financial Group did a survey where they asked Americans, they said, what's the number one budget buster that you experience. We say, gee, I spent more money on that than I planned on or than I wanted to. And eating out was the top one at 23%, and groceries was the next most cited one at 18%. And we obviously need food. We obviously need to spend money on it, but there are ways that you can still get enough sustenance without spending too much money on that, whether that involves eating at home or eating less or eating a little healthier. And one of the reasons that we're going to talk about this over the next 30 days is that of those people in that survey who said about half of them make resolutions, only 1 in 10 said they keep those resolutions.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Let's start with an issue that several listeners have been wondering about. Solicitations received in the mail to refinance current debt or to borrow new money, but it doesn't appear to be coming from a bank. Do you know what this is about, Kevin?
Yeah, it's easy to understand the confusion because it looks just like those commands that we get from traditional banks or maybe kind of secondary lenders or maybe a credit union where they say you're pre-approved or you're pre-qualified or something like that. And they're actually coming from what are called peer-to-peer lenders. And two of the biggest ones by far are Lending Club and Prosper. And they went about $2 billion or facilitated, I should say, about $2 billion of loans in 2013. And what it really is, it's money from regular people like you and me who are lending it to other regular people like you or me. But they're using the service to facilitate. And because there's some increased interest in the service and they're getting some money and venture capital backing, they're becoming more aggressive in their marketing, and they're trying to get more people to borrow money.
So help me out here. How do peer-to-peer lenders work for borrowers?
Well, it's not for everyone, and it depends on the state. You may not be able to participate in this. Iowa, for example, has some stricter regulations against participating in peer-to-peer lending. But otherwise, it's similar to other lenders. It's kind of eliminating the middle person. If you need to borrow money, you apply to this service, and based in part on your credit score, you will get a judgment back that says here is kind of the interest rate that you will have to pay if our people approve for you. You can borrow up to $35,000, and the payment term is usually 3 to 5 years. The interest rate can be fairly low, from maybe 7 to 8% if your credit is really good. Up to 15% is usually the average rate on most of the loans for these two services, and then 25 to 35% annual interest rate is the cap for it. If you get approved and enough people say, yeah, we want to lend this person money, you get the amount that you've asked for minus a fee that is usually a 1% to 5% processing fee. And that's generally how these lending services, the peer-to-peer lenders, make their money. And then you start repaying it monthly.
Do you recommend these sites for those looking to borrow money?
Maybe. I would still encourage people to try a traditional source first, like their bank or credit union, and see what the answer is, because and that is going to affect your credit score a small amount generally. So you want to be a little cautious about doing this too frequently and at too many different places over a longer period of time. But you might be pleasantly surprised about what your bank or credit union says to you when you try to borrow any kind of money at all. If you don't like the answer they give you, then go to one of these peer-to-peer lenders. But there's a website that helps educate people on these services. It's called LendAcademy.com, LendAcademy.com, and you can go there to get more information on the whole process from a relatively unbiased source. And we'll have that website, LendAcademy.com, up at our website, OnYourMoney.com, later on today.
Well, if we have a few extra bucks lying around, do you think we should lend money through these services?
Yeah, we are actually going to talk about that. And offhand, I would just want people to consider it kind of like investing in a higher risk, higher potential reward bond mutual fund.
All right. We'll talk more in the future. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. During this first of 2015 On Your Money, we are devoting the entire hour to your questions, to listener questions, your emails and your calls. And let's take our first caller, Gina in Milwaukee. Hi, Gina.
Hi.
Yes, what's your question?
I'm 29. I'm about to be 30, and I don't have a 401k or a retirement plan. And it was really my goal in 2014, which I didn't get to. So I just want to know, like, where I should start.
Well, you sound like a really bright person, Gina, in part because you listen to the show, but your question is a good one. What I'm interested in is, for a very bright person, you sound like a little surprised that you actually are 29 and then we're going to turn 30. That came as a big shock, didn't it?
It is a big shock. It's happening in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, okay. Well, good. Well, happy birthday and congratulations. And it's better to start sooner than later, but this is definitely, it feels like later to you, but it still counts as sooner because most people, either through apathy or ignorance or just they're not able to put money aside, really don't focus on saving for retirement until their 30s and their 40s. And by then, you've had a lot of time that's evaporated where your money could hopefully have been growing. So what I would do, are you, if you don't mind me asking, Jan, are you a single tax filer or are you married filing jointly?
No, I'm single, no kids.
Okay. Good, because for the time being anyway, until that changes, if it ever changes, you'll have lots of extra money that you will not have at that point. What I would do is if you're in an upper income bracket, and I mean for a single person, if you generally gross more than $50,000 per year, you're better off making a tax-deductible contribution, and that would be to an IRA. And do you have a 401k option at work, Gina, or not?
No, I don't.
Okay, that's fine. And what I would do is I would make an IRA contribution, and you can contribute the lesser of your earnings or $5,500, and you can make one for 2014's tax year by April 15th of 2015. So I don't want to encourage you to procrastinate, but you have over 3 months from today until when you would have to make that contribution. And the cool thing about making the tax-deductible contribution to an IRA is not only are you saving for retirement, but depending on your tax bracket, say a $5,000 contribution to an IRA will probably save you about $1,000 on your tax bill this year. And where I would go to look at that is you might want to try one of the financial service companies like Vanguard or Fidelity or Schwab online. Or you might want to, again, if you have a bank or a credit union, go to them and say, do you offer IRAs? Can I open one here? What are the different investment options, et cetera?
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Good luck,
Gina.
Thank
you. Thank you, Gina, for the call. Coming up, we will have an email question about the 60-day rule regarding IRA disbursements. And Kevin will have answers to your personal finance questions, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, along with financial planner Kevin McKinley. And this is a special all questions answered edition of On Your Money. Kevin has answers to your personal finance questions to help you reach your financial goals for 2015. Let's go back to the phones. Mary in Pewaukee is with us now. Hello, Mary.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Kevin. Thanks in advance for answering my question, then I'll take your comments off the air and write down what you might have to say. But some things that I've read, and it's the chicken little thing, you know, that there's going to be a recession or a big depression. I'm not saying that I'm believing that, but I'm not an expert, so I wanted your comments on that. And also, if and when this could happen, or things just get worse, because, you know, the stock market can only go so high, and it's doing amazingly well for so long now, is I am already retired, so I'm on Social Security. My husband has about 5 more years to work, or less if possible, once we have our mortgage paid off. What would we do or ask our financial institution to do for us to prepare for his coming retirement, as well as if there would be something? Should we just go more to bonds than stocks?
All right, so I guess maybe some general advice, Kevin, on that for Mary. But what about the stock market had been doing okay, but boy, it took a dive Monday. And, is there speculation that another great recession is in store?
Mary really put me in a box there because she preemptively thanked me for asking the question, which I now legally am obligated to answer the question no matter what it was. The stock market, as defined by the Dow Jones Industrial Average, is going to go up and go down, and many people have been lulled into complacency because it hasn't had a lot of volatility, especially over the last several years. And we are going to go into a recession. I don't know when. I don't know how long it will last. I don't know what the effects of that recession will be. We always do. We always will. It's just a matter of time before the economy kind of grows too quickly, and then all of a sudden it gets overheated and people start scaling back, that's something that we really can't prevent happening, but we can prevent it from damaging our financial situation. And especially for people who are on the precipice of retirement, it's especially frightening because they're not only giving up their steady income, but they're also giving up tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars of their portfolio if the value of their investments should decline. So what I would say is that anyone who is concerned about a downfall in investment prices in their portfolio, go through a fire drill. And with your stock funds, cut those in half. And if you said, what do you mean cut them in half? Say that they drop 50%. And your bond funds, that sometimes can offer shelter, but other times they can have almost as much or more risk than certain stock funds. In those cases, cut those in by 20 to 30% in the value. So let's say you have $100,000 in stock funds. Turn that down to $50,000 and just say, gosh, if this were to happen, how would I feel? And more importantly, how would it damage my long-term financial security? And if you would be very upset by that, and if it would damage your security, you may want to scale back on your stock or your bond funds and go into things that are more conservative, like short-term treasuries, certificates of deposit. These are not going to pay much interest, if anything, but that's not what they're designed to do for you. They're more as a placeholder for funds so that you not only have money to live on, but if there is a decline, you can then reinvest that money and rebalance the portfolio by adding more of your preserved money into the funds that have gone down in value. And that's called rebalancing. It's a good idea, not so much that it it's guaranteed to improve performance or give you more money over the long run, but it keeps you from selling things when they're low and buying things when they're high. And so I would have a store of cash, and generally I'd like to see you have a good 2 to 3 years worth of living expenses in retirement in that kind of fund where it's not going to go up in value, but it's not going to go down in value either. And that'll also help you kind of ride out swings in the investment prices because you know you have money to draw from for your living expenses.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Kevin is a financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us a question at Joy Cardine Show. Mark in Wausau is with us. Hello, Mark.
Hi. Thanks, Kevin. You're certainly an asset to Wisconsin. Thanks for all your help.
You said asset, right?
I have a question about some pension funds that I have. I was a teacher. I've invested in Minnesota 5 years in. I'm 44 now. There's about $20,000 that I would be able to access if I would pull out of that pension fund, and about double that in the Wisconsin fund. I'm curious, because I'm hoping you can be a tiebreaker. I've talked to several people who I really appreciate their help with money, but they're tied. Some say keep it in the retirement fund. Some say pull it and invest it myself, and hoping you can help me break the tie.
Okay. Is these funds that you have, Mark, are they in deferred compensation funds, which are kind of like mutual funds or 401ks that they can kind of go up and down in value? Or is it a pension where at some point, you can take a lump sum out now of $20,000 or at some point, when you're 55 or 60 or 65, say, they'll give you $300 a month or something for as long as you live?
The latter. It's a true pension that would pay a monthly amount.
Okay. If that is a smaller portion of your finances, I'm okay with making the bet that the good people in the state of Minnesota will not only be able but be willing to make those payments for you. And the longer you plan on living and the longer that the pension fund exists and is paying at a sustainable rate, the more likely that that option will turn out better for you than just about any other, you know, mutual fund investment or stock investment that you might be able to get on your own. The problem is, of course, is that may change, and you may need access to those funds. We're at $200,000 or $2 million, I'd say, gee, that's a lot of money to not have in your control, and quite frankly, not have any knowledge of where it's invested or what might happen to that payout down the road. But for an amount that's, you know, $20,000 is a lot of money, but it's probably a relatively small portion of what you'll eventually have for retirement. I'm okay leaving it there, and part of the reason I like it is because you can always transfer it out, but once you transfer it out, you can never go back to it. So for the time being, and since it is such a relatively small amount in the big picture, I'm okay with you leaving it there until you decide that you need the money or you find a better option someplace else.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Mark. Good luck to you. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. This is a special all questions answered edition of On Your Money. A listener named Paul emails, I have an IRA question with two parts. One, I am over 59 and a half years old and I took a disbursement from my IRA. If I did not use all of the money that I took out, does the 60-day rule let me put the money back into the IRA in 60 days with no tax imposed? Number two, if I took the disbursement from IRA number one in December, then replaced it within 60 days with a disbursement from IRA number two in January, could I spread my tax liability over 2 years instead of all of it in 2014? He then closes with, you have the best advice in the entire solar system. If your advice was a planet, it would be Jupiter. Oh, my goodness. All right, Paul, if you're false praise, well, never mind. Pretty far out, though. Anyway, what do you
that's
say to
right
Paul
up
Kevin?
There. Well, I don't know if that's a compliment because as my kids told me when they were little, Jupiter rhymes with stupider. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Let's start first on that 60-day rule. You can take money out of an IRA regardless of your age at any time and do with it as you wish. As long as you return it to an IRA within 60 days, you will pay no taxes or penalties. But it has to be within the 60 days, and it has to be handled very carefully, because if you goof it up, the IRS will treat it as a distribution, and they can track it. They get all the information on the distributions of IRAs from the IRA custodians. It's one of the reasons you pay the custodian those fees. And when the IRS says you took this out, they will want to see proof that it was rolled in properly and within the certain period of time. And there's a new change in 2015 where now people can only do one rollover per year. So if you're moving money around like this, you have to be very conscious that you adhere to these guidelines. Otherwise, you will not only take it as a distribution and it will be taxed as income, but if you're under 59 and a half, you could have another 10% penalty assessed on the amount that was not properly handled.
So the question, does the 60-day rule let him put the money back into the IRA in 60
yes.
days?
Yes, the answer to that, Paul, is yes.
Okay. What about tapping another IRA to replenish the one that he liquidated?
Ah, the shell game. That cannot be done. The 60-day allowance is only once per year, and by year, the good people at the IRS mean every 365 days, not a calendar year. So he cannot keep tapping IRAs to replenish ones he's withdrawn money from.
Mm-hmm. Any other advice for Paul?
Probably not to get too stressed out about this. It's nice to avoid the taxes if he can, but he's going to have to take the money out of that IRA sooner or later, and especially after turning 70 and a half. So as long as he's over 59 and a half, there is no 10% penalty. It's just taxable as ordinary income. And there are some things that he can do with the money now in terms of investing it or in other kinds of options that might be better off just keeping it outside of the IRA. So, yeah, try to do the 60 days if you can. But don't worry too much if he can't get it done and can't repay the entire withdrawal.
Let's go back to the phones, and now we go to Joe in Mercer. Hello, Joe.
Morning, Joy. Morning, Kevin. I got kind of a bad problem.
Uh-oh.
I listen to your advice. I spend less and have more, but I'm out of debt. I'm 55 years old. I'm planning on retiring in June of this year. And my credit score keeps dropping because I don't have a reoccurring payment. And because of that, my house insurance is going up, my car insurance is going up, and my credit score is going down.
Oh, that's not fair.
Well, no, but because I'm not proving I'm paying on anything, they said that my credit score is dropping. The local banker said to take out a credit card. I just wondered, you know, what you had on that. I know it's not a bad problem, but in a way it is.
Well, it is, but a lot of people listening, Joe, would trade places with you in a heartbeat. here's what I'd actually go along with your local banker on this, especially if you're finding that it's a substantial hit on the insurance fees. And it's a good lesson for people about trying to keep your credit score up, because home insurance, auto insurance, even jobs can be affected by your credit score. So it's a good idea, and we'll be talking about this obviously over the next several weeks, but it's a good idea to keep your score as high as you possibly can. I agree with that. Here's what I would do. I would get a credit card, and I would use that credit card to pay for gas, let's say. And every time you get the card through the meter, it'll be a payment, and then you hopefully can make the payment due. It's not like it's going to cost you any money if you don't let it go, and it's not going to cost you anything in interest for it, but it will boost your credit score up, and then hopefully that'll be enough to mitigate the expense of the higher premiums. Let me ask you, Joe, have you confirmed indeed that these higher premium costs are simply because of your credit score?
Yes, I've called both the home and the auto insurance companies, and they said because of the score, it's dropped about over 60 points in a year.
Wow.
I was over 800, and I'm down in the 740s.
Okay. That's actually still better than average.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's worth it, since you're going to be paying for these kinds of things anyway, and you sound very diligent about paying your cards off. I think it's worth it to use the credit card. And I would also look at, if you haven't shopped around for a while, it might be a good time to look for another insurance policy, and maybe one that's not predicated quite so drastically on your credit score.
Okay, well, Kevin, should I keep a balance on that credit card? Or
I would not do that. I don't think that's worth it, especially if the interest rate is higher.
Yeah, good luck, Joe. I just, you know, poor guy has a good credit score and gets out of debt, and now his credit score lowers and he has to pay higher insurance rates. Kaylee in Madison. Hi, Kaylee.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy this program. I just had some questions because I recently had a family member pass away, and I was left an inheritance, and I was actually left a vehicle and probably about $75,000 in cash. And I was just kind of wondering if there's anything I should keep in mind as far as that goes, or if there's inheritance tax to pay. I don't really know anything about that.
It's highly unlikely that those would be taxed. Inheritance taxes are generally only due at the federal level on a little over $5 million worth of an estate.
Oh.
And unless it's really a great car, I don't think that will be a problem. And usually the inheritance taxes are the responsibility of the estate and the executor, et cetera, of trying to figure out money for it. Not always, but sometimes that's the best way to handle it. And other than that, no. And if you don't, was the cash, Kaylee, was it in regular cash, or was it in the form of an IRA or an annuity?
Part of it will be from an annuity.
Okay.
And then part of it will be from, like, liquidation of the estate and property.
Okay. Was the annuity actually liquidated and then sent to you, or did you just take ownership of the account?
No, it was liquidated and sent to me.
Okay. Do you know how much that was by any chance?
It is about $105,000, but I'm splitting it.
Okay.
With another family member.
Okay. So you received 50 some thousand dollars, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's where the problem is going to come for you. And again, it's a good problem to have. But technically, that will be taxable income to you, I'm guessing. And
okay.
And there's really not much of a way to get around it other than trying to cut your taxes through other methods. And did you receive the money in the 2014 year?
No, it'll be 2015.
Okay.
But I was the beneficiary on the annuity. Does that make a difference?
Probably not.
Okay.
And here's what I would do. First of all, do you work, Kaylee?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you maxing out your contributions to your 401k or at work?
No, I'm not.
Okay. If it's possible for you to do that, that's a good way to mitigate any windfall tax and from the income tax from the annuity. And so
okay.
You might want to try bumping that up right now, and that should reduce your overall tax bill. Just use the money that is coming from the inheritance and from the annuity to offset the money that you're putting into the 401k. And same thing if you're married and your spouse has the same plan, always have he or she put that money into the pre-tax plan as well. Second thing I would do, Kaylee, is I would find a good tax person, and you can go to AICPA.org, AICPA.org, and he or she can hopefully help you not only make sure you file the proper taxes, but maybe give you some strategies to help reduce the taxes that you'll have to pay on this annuity distribution.
Okay.
All right, Kaylee, thanks for the call. Good luck. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Kevin is a financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. We will we'll get an email question coming up soon on paying off a student loan and more of your personal finance questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I need fun.
This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and what we want is your call or your email, your personal finance question during this All Questions Answered edition of On Your Money. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Let's go to Mike in East Troy next. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Thanks for your question. Have a good day.
I have a CD that's matured. I've got about $40,000, and of course, it didn't earn anything really over the past couple of years. I'm looking for a place to put it that's going to minimize the tax impact on it. What can you tell me?
Well, first of all, let me ask you a question back. Why? What's the tax impact, especially if it's not going to earn anything? What are you concerned about with the taxation?
Well, I'd like to earn more in returns on it. I have a Vanguard account, index mutual funds with domestic, international stocks and bonds. And last year when I did my taxes, my tax guy said, gee, you know, I've got about $85,000 in that. And he says, the good news is you did well. The bad news is you're getting hit with taxes on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking for a way to move things around so I'm not having that issue.
Okay. And I like all of this, Mike. Is the CD, does it have the money that's in the CD, does it have a specific purpose? Is it your rainy day money, or is it just something said, hey, I didn't know what to do with this, so I just put it there?
It came from a bit of an inheritance, and it was like, well, let's put it here for now and see what happens. And I don't know exactly what it's going to be used for down the road. I'm pretty well set up retirement-wise. I'm 60. I'm retired. I'm on a pension. My wife's working. We're in pretty good shape. We both have Roth IRAs. I've got an IRA, and we both have 403Bs. So this is kind of like, well, let's put it somewhere where it'll do us the most good, but not, you know, where we're paying big taxes on it. I was going to add it to the Vanguard account, but I'm thinking maybe that's not a good thing.
Well, it can be for tax reasons, in part because depending on the distributions and the type of mutual fund you use, the distributions that come out of those mutual funds can either be tax advantage, meaning they come from qualified dividends, or they are from securities that have been held more than a year, and so you pay a lower capital gains, short or long-term capital gains tax on it. If you're in a very high tax bracket, you might want to look at tax-free bonds because then you'll get some interest from those funds that invest in tax-free bonds and not have to pay taxes on it. But keep in mind that they can be volatile. They're not certificates of deposit. And that's why I'm curious about if it is serving as kind of a safe pool of money for you. The only way to really...
I can be a little bit risky with it.
Okay. Then you may want to just add it to those funds. But keep in mind two things. One is that they can definitely go down in value, and whatever you would have saved on taxes or by using a tax advantage fund, which, by the way, Vanguard does have a few tax advantage mutual funds that they try to invest in things that hopefully grow over the long term but don't add a significant amount to your tax bill on a year-to-year basis. Second thing you can do is you might want to look at investing in something within a tax-deferred variable annuity, but that's really only kicking the tax can down the road, because eventually when the money's pulled out of there, as Kaylee found out when she inherited an annuity, you have to pay taxes on the earnings portion of that when you tap that money. If you want to keep it safe, I would recommend Series I savings bonds. You can buy up to $10,000 per person per calendar year at treasurydirect.gov. They pay about, maybe 1.5% a year. It's adjustable rate, but that interest is exempt from state taxes for Wisconsin residents, and you can choose to defer the taxation on them if you don't pull the money out. So as long as you don't pull the interest and the proceeds out, there's no taxes on that interest whatsoever. It's only when you actually redeem the bonds that that you have a tax bill.
Good luck to you, Mike. Thanks for the call. Happy New Year. Kay in Maryland is with us. Hi, Kay.
You pronounced it right. I'm so proud.
Well,
Kay? Did she say that right?
Yeah, she said it right. No.
Maryland is does not look like Baltimore, Maryland. Let's put it that way.
No. It's just south of Eau Claire.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. I inherited my mom's house, and I have no clue what I'm doing. I need to know what I need to know about renting.
Oh.
Never been a landlady.
You really want to rent it out, or this is
my
just...
My mom gave me strict orders to keep it in the family, or she would haunt me.
Oh wow. Okay. And if I tell you to do otherwise, I'm guessing she'll find me, too.
She will.
Yeah, so I'm renting it to my nephew.
Okay. That's good. What are your concerns about it, Kay?
Well, I need to know what I've got to get ready for taxes, and I've no clue how to be a landlady.
Is there
a website I can go to?
Yeah, actually, there are a bunch of them. I'd start at NOLO.com, N-O-L-O, NOLO.com. And that has more legal information. But if you just type the word landlord in the search engine, they'll provide lots of different articles there about some things you should be thinking of. And I think they even have an actual book that I would encourage you to purchase. It's probably $25 or $30 that is all the ins and outs, not just from a tax standpoint, but from the legal standpoint as well. You're incurring some liability by renting this out to a person. And so I'd go to NOLO.com and see what they say. And I would also, especially if you have any other things going on in your life that present some tax complexity, Kay, is I would actually try to find a tax preparer, especially someone who is well-versed in handling the returns of landlords as to the benefits and the drawbacks that you can apply to your situation and hopefully cut your tax bill as well.
Oh, good. All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck with that, Kay. Thanks for calling. Arlene in Clintonville is with us now. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a really confusing question for you, Kevin, that can I do a regular IRA over the age of 70 and a half if I have earned income, but then what do I do about the RMDs?
That is a kind of a tricky question. Let's look at this. You have to take the RMDs from the plan if it's not a 401k plan for it. So you can't get around that. How much earned income did you have?
Just enough to make a annual IRA.
Okay. I would say that here's the problem with it. If you're in the same tax bracket that you are in when you take the distribution, you're really only just kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, because you're using money that you would have taken out to do it. What I might suggest if your income is that low is you do a Roth IRA instead.
I have that also.
Okay, but you can only contribute to one of them, right?
I thought you could contribute to both.
You can, except that you can only contribute a total dollar amount to each one of in your case, $6,500.
To what I'm doing with the Roth, though, is rolling over money that's already like an RNA.
I'm sorry. It's like it's so you have an IRA and you're rolling it over to a Roth IRA or
yes, yeah. Well, I have deferred comp basically, and I'm rolling that over annually into an IRA into a Roth just to save on paying future taxes on that same amount of money.
Okay, you mean on the earnings portion of it?
Right, right.
Okay, and do you have also Social Security and pension and things like that?
Yes. Both of those, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. I'm trying to think of. There's actually a couple different things. And you're correct. It's a simple situation, but there are a couple other things I want you to think about on this. One is your Social Security taxable?
Yes.
Okay. And have you figured out that if you can take more out of this, can you still keep yourself in a 15% federal income tax bracket?
I haven't been there in a long time.
Okay. You mean you're above it?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, I don't think that you're going to be able to do the IRA contribution. It's the Roth IRA that you can do as long as you've got the earned income and you can't, and your earned income, your taxable AGI doesn't exceed the certain limits. But you can't do the traditional IRA. Do they have anything at your place of employment that's a tax-deferred retirement plan?
Not that I know of.
Okay, I would ask on that, too, and see what they can do.
All right. Okay.
All right. Good luck, Arlene. Boy, working. She's working quite late too. So good for her, I guess.
Well, and you know, 70 is the new 50. So that's
right.
And that's something that there are a lot of people out there. Some of them need to work at that age, but others just say, you know what? There's I've caught up on all my soaps, and there's only so much things I can complain about on the internet. So I might as well go make some money.
All right, Cece in Door County is with us. Hi, Cece.
Good morning, and Happy New Year to you both.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, Cece.
Yes, I was just wondering if you could point me to a resource for socially responsible investment funds, and specifically the ones I've been looking for and have had no luck are companies that focus on global women's and children's health and education.
Okay. It's a noble endeavor, and there is a mutual fund. I think it's socialfunds.com is the website that has all these out there. And there are a couple that, as far as I know, CC, do offer that type of screening and down to gender-specific issues, but none that I know of that follow or adhere to those types of criteria. Now, here is what I would suggest as an alternative, is that you take your money, let's say it's $10,000 that you want to invest, and you invest in a very low-cost Vanguard mutual fund, which are typically going to save you about 1% per year in expenses over a traditional broker-sold fund. And on that $10,000, that means you're going to be paying 1% less of that or $100 less, and then take the $100 and donate it directly to a charity or nonprofit that deals with those issues. Because there, first of all, many socially responsible funds, it sounds altruistic. What it really is a term and a category set up by the marketing people at the mutual fund company. They know that people, smart people like you, want to invest wisely and invest with their hearts and ethics and morals in mind. And so they figure if they call something socially responsible that they'll bring the money in, which is their job. And they can do a good job of adhering to those criteria, but sometimes it's more cynical than what we would hope. And so if you can find a low-cost index fund, save the money on that you're normally paying a traditional fund, and then use that savings to invest in it, it's actually more of a direct help. But if you can look at socialfunds.com, you might find one that meets your criteria, but I don't know of any offhand that do.
Good luck, Cece. Sarah on Facebook writes, I have about $2,600 from private student loans in debt collection. They, National Enterprise Systems, are offering a settlement of $1,900, but at this point I can only put it on a credit card. Should I make this deal? Is it legit? What do you think, Kevin?
Well, It's hard to know how legitimate it is. There is a debt collection agency called National Enterprise Systems. And if this is indeed a legitimate offer with no strings attached, yes, she's getting this off of her investments or debts in arrears. And she's saving $700 over what she owed, so it sounds like a pretty good deal. But first, I would like her to contact the original lender, the private lender who gave her the student loan, make sure that this is a legitimate offer and that the money has indeed been turned over to it, and also check and see if they have any other solutions the original lender has over the situation as well. Also ensure that the debt will be canceled out if you do agree to pay this off, and get everything in writing, all these conversations, all the offers of settlement, get them all in writing from all parties involved.
Is there any reason why she wouldn't want to agree to the deal?
Actually, there are several reasons. First of all, she might not just want to take their first offer. Oftentimes, there is room for negotiation with the collection agency, so she might come back and say, you know what, I can do this, but would you accept $1,500 or $1,200 and see what they say? The worst thing they can do is say no, and they'll still gladly take her $1,900. Also, the interest rate on the credit card that she charges may be higher than what they're charging on the interest that she owes from the student loans, and it does use up her available credit on the credit card and will also hurt her credit score. But, you know, the outstanding debt and the settlement can also hurt that as well. If she does go through with this and is able to find out that it is legitimate and covers the debt, wipes it off her books, try to repay that credit card off as quickly as possible. And keep in mind that the amount forgiven on these types of debts is often taxable income. So some people are relieved to find out, okay, good, that's done. I don't have to deal with it anymore. But the difference between what she owed and what she actually paid may be considered taxable income by the IRS, and she may owe income taxes on that amount.
And here is an email from Clara. I'm a huge On Your Money fan. I recently bought a 2-unit house and became a landlord. Can you recommend any tax professionals or a resource to find a pro in the Madison area that could advise me on what tax credits to claim and how to file?
Yeah, there are a couple different ways you can go to it. One of it is if you go to AICPA.org, that is the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. It gives you a chance to search for different CPAs in a particular geographic area. And then once you contact them, Clara, you can even ask the person at the desk who takes your call initially, say, I'm looking for a CPA who has some experience in real estate and can help me find out, make sure I'm filing everything I need to, but also taking advantage of any opportunities that I can from this unique relationship. And she can also, if she bought the 2-unit house, she was in contact with some real estate agents, ask the real estate agent, say, by the way, do you know any CPAs whom you could recommend to me who have an expertise in this particular area?
And do you have a website of the week for us, Kevin?
I do. ConsumerAdvocates.org is a nationwide nonprofit of 1,500 attorneys that help consumers who have had problems with debt settlements or ID theft or other areas where they feel like they've been ripped off. ConsumerAdvocates.org. It's got articles and tools and the ability to find an attorney in your area who specializes this. And we'll have that website up at onyourmoney.com later on today.
And I'm looking forward to another new year of great financial advice, Kevin. 4 more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. He is with us just about every week at this time with information and advice on your money. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Christy Taylor, and to Brianne Chasso for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.